can be a plague for many. We see it out there. We ourselves can be susceptible towards being affected by it. There's a very strong example we have from Karbala regarding somebody who was hungry for the dunya. Umar ibn Sa'd, la'anatullahi alayh, was somebody who should have known better. He was the son of a famous companion, Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas. That man was a reciter of Qur'an, he was a narrator of traditions, he was a sahabi. Umar should have known better. How many sermons had he heard? How much had he been told about when it came to the harm of being hungry for the dunya? But when that crucial time comes and he's tested, he has to make a decision and he splits. He turns away from this whole thing. He says, no, that's all a fable. Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad promises him that if you take on this mission of diverting Imam Hussein alayhi salam, I'm going to give you the governorship of Ray. Ray was a province in modern-day Iran. Ray was a city that people were very keen on governing because they would mean a lot of advantage to them, a lot of dunya, a lot of material power and wealth. He sees himself facing these two choices, but he chooses wrongly. We too can be faced with that situation so many times in our lives. Sometimes we find that pressure to almost live a dual personality. There was a young person who came to me, he says that, I'm in university. I try my best to stay away from haram. I try my best to say my prayers. But there's one thing which I have trouble with. Do you have any advice for me? I said that, okay, what's the issue? He said that, in order to say my prayers, I have to perform wudu. And in order to do wudu, I have to go to the washroom. And there I feel very uncomfortable performing that wudu in front of everyone else. Is there any way I can do tayammum and avoid doing that wudu in front of everyone? And just go off and do my prayers on the side and then just go in and join everyone else. This type of thinking, brothers and sisters, is characteristic. In this case, of course, the answer is no. Tayammum is something which is valid in circumstances where we can't perform wudu. There's no water to perform it. Or we feel that it's going to harm us or other extenuating circumstances. But in this situation right here, not only do we have to do wudu, we have to do so in a proud sort of way. What is it that we're trying to hide? Why is it that we're trying to live this dual personality? There's one side that I have that I show to everyone in school and everyone in work. But there's another one that I have on the prayer mat and when I go to mosque. Sometimes in the Sunday schools we see the same thing. That when I come to the Sunday school, I have one personality. I have to show that I'm interested. I have to show that I'm keen. But when I go to public school, it's a different personality. Why do we have this split sort of personality? The Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam tell us, اجعل همك همّا واحدا. Have one way of living your life. Have one standard of living your life. Have one goal and one definition of what is success. Allahumma ij'alni عندك وجيها بالحسين. I want to be someone who has standing with you, O Allah. That's what's supposed to define who I am. How is it that we can get there? The Ahlul Bayt have given us wonderful advice in this regard. They were very practical. They were extremely practical. They showed us how we ought to live our lives. Unfortunately, sometimes we think of Islam having to be do something to do with just fables and fairy tales. Something that we just need to tell a few stories, go home, and then we lead the rest of our life until next time we go back to mosque. But that's not the way the Ahlul Bayt lived. Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahj al-Balagha, in one of the sayings that's reported in that masterpiece, he gives us the key to success. How is it that we can achieve the status of being distinguished and having standing with Allah? He says, "Annasu fi dunya amilan." There's two type of people when it comes to the way they operate in this dunya. Amilun amila fi dunya lid dunya. There is somebody who operates and works in the dunya, in the world, for the sake of the world. قَدْ شَغَلَتْهُ الدُّنْيَاهُ عَنْ آخِرَتِهِ. The dunya has occupied that person. Basically, all they're busy with is trying to achieve success in the way that they define it. They're just trying to, they're hungry for the dunya and trying to achieve as much as they can of that just for the sake of that. يَخْشَ عَلَى مَنْ يُخْلِفُهُ الْفَقْرَ وَيَأْمَنُهُ عَلَى نَفْسِهِ. This line is very, very deep. He said that such a person actually is always living in the state of fear. What sort of fear? They're told that they have to keep on working and working and working, and if they don't do so, then they're going to be a failure. The people who are depending on them aren't going to have anything to survive on. So they're just working for the dunya, for the sake of the dunya. But in reality, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, so in reality, what he has guaranteed for himself is nothing but poverty. Even if that person makes it big, and if they make it rich, they're going to actually be very poor. Because they don't have any of that standing with Allah. They're not working towards that goal. That's one person. Then he says the second type of person is Aminun. Amila fi dunya lima ba'adaha. There's somebody who works in the dunya, but for the sake of what comes after it. فَجَاءَهُ الَّذِي لَهُ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا بِغَيْرِ عَمَلٍ. Whatever it is that he needs or she needs from the dunya comes to him or her. But they don't have to work for the sake of the dunya. فَأَحْرَزَ الْحَظَّيْنِ مَعًا. They get both the dunya and they get the akhirah. وَمَلِكَ الدَّارَيْنِ جَمِيعًا. They become a king. They become a king of both the world and the hereafter. فَأَصْبَحَ وَجِيهًا عَنْدَ اللَّهِ. That person gains standing in front of Allah. لَا يَسْأَلُ اللَّهَ حَاجَةً فَيَمْنَعُهُ. They don't ask anything from Allah that Allah holds back from them. Now brothers and sisters, we want to break this down and try to understand the type of practical lesson it has from us. Basically, Imam Ali alayhi salam is giving us something which is very practical. But it's something that we need to think about and see how we can apply for ourselves. He's not saying that if we want to have good standing with Allah, we basically have to sit back, take a chill pill, don't go to university, don't go to work, and just go on the prayer mat. No, that's not it. He's saying that we need to go and work, we need to be busy, we need to study, we need to do whatever occupation it is that is our responsibility. But we have to do so not for the sake of this world, but for the sake of the hereafter. The Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam told us that we need to work, and they encouraged working hard. That's one of the things that we can gain from this, is that we need to work hard, but with the right intention. What is it that we're working for? Are we working to be part of that same rat race? If so, we should know that we're never going to be content, because there's always more and more to be gotten. Or are we working in order to perform our responsibility with Allah? As I said, the Ahlul Bayt wanted us to work, and they wanted to just work to work hard. One time, our beloved Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, was coming back from a battle. He's coming from out of town. As he enters the city, it seems that the people, the Muslims who are left behind, they're very happy that their Prophet has returned back to them. They line up to welcome him. There's one man, an elderly man, who's among them, who goes up to his Prophet and he shakes his hand. Our Prophet extends his hand and he shakes that man's hand and he finds that it's very rough. He asks him, "Oh, so and so, why is it that I find that your hand..." His name was Sa'ad al-Ansari. Oh Sa'd, why is it that I find that your hand is so rough? He says to him that, Ya Rasulullah, for years and years I have toiled on my field, and I work with rope, I build wells, I make that rope and I put the well in, and I have to take the well up. Every day I do that, and as a result of that, my hands have become hard like this. Rasulullah asks him, why is it that you're doing this? He says that I'm doing it so I can provide for my family. Rasulullah bends his blessed head down and he kisses the man's hand. This is the type of work that Rasulullah appreciates. When somebody has a purpose in mind, in this case, a divine purpose, providing for the family, that's why they're doing what they're doing. It's not that they're hungering for the dunya, and that's why they're doing what they're doing. This is a very important lesson for us, brothers and sisters. The Ahlul Bayt were not individuals who were poor, who didn't have anything to do with the dunya. No, they were wealthy, but they would give away their wealth. They had so much wealth that, according to tradition, they could have fed the entire city with their wealth. They could have taken care of the poverty, and they did so. They would give away everything that they had. They gave land to their descendants. They weren't people who didn't know how to operate in the dunya, but they knew how to operate in the dunya. They knew what sort of intention they should have and how they should go about doing so. Now, in order to make this discussion practical, what I'd like to end with is to give an example of what does it mean to work and to be and to study and to be part of this society, but to do so for the hereafter. I want to give the example of what somebody would want to do if they want to be involved in the medical profession. They want to be a doctor. Okay, all this is, you know, good theory, you know, good ahadith, ayat, but what does it mean practically if somebody wants to do this? Let me just give a few guidelines that we can derive from the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. Number one is that if somebody wants to engage in studying a particular field, or they want to engage in an occupation, they have to first of all be very clear on what is the line between haram and halal. When is it that we're allowed to do this, and when are we not allowed to do? There are many things a doctor can do that not only are halal, but are actually some of the greatest acts of service to Allah and to humankind. But there are some parts of this profession, the way it's practiced in the society, which are contrary to the teachings of Islam. So if I'm thinking about entering it, first I have to research what is it that I can do and I can't do, and I have to plan accordingly. Before I go to medical school, I have to be very clear and do my research and understand what parts of it are going to involve and entail things that I need to stay away from. I need to talk to the admissions officers and see, can I be exempt from those things or not? This type of discussion is something we need to think about before we get into it, brothers and sisters. Sometimes we get into a profession, and we start it, and we realize that actually we're working for the dunya because we're doing something which is haram. Our income is haram. It's spoiling every hope of becoming close to Allah because of that haram wealth that we're acquiring. But then it's too late. We need to start from beforehand. Secondly, when we enter into the profession, we need to understand how to go about doing so in a way that we're working for the hereafter. Some doctors, I can speak coming from America, especially in that system, they work for the system. They work for money. It's a capitalist system, and it's based on trying to make as much money as possible for the insurance companies, for the doctors. It's terrible. A doctor who goes to see patients, you gotta wonder, are they seeing them for the patients or are they seeing them for the dollar signs they're gonna be getting from them? But when we look at the teachings of Islam, Islam gives us a whole different perspective on what is the role of a doctor. Let's just look at a few of these beautiful teachings we have from Islam. Again, The topic is towards an Islamic lifestyle. These are things that we can take and apply to whatever it is that we're doing in our lives, whether we're in the medical field or other professions. In a tradition from Imam Ali alayhi salam, he said that anybody who wants to take on the profession of being a doctor, as I said, the Ahlul Bayt were practical. Somebody who wants to be a doctor has to have three characteristics. Number one, they have to have taqwa. They have to be doing it for the sake of God. Number two, when they're interacting with people, they should be wanting the best of that person. Sometimes you go to a doctor and you wonder, what is it? How much do they really care for you? Why is it that they're so trying to get, it's almost as if they're trying to get you out of the office as quick as possible. Are they asking you all the questions that they need to ask? Do they really care about you? Imam Ali says that a doctor should care and should want the best of the person, of their patient. And second, third of all, he says that a doctor should take pains to properly diagnose the problem of their patient. SubhanAllah, if only the doctors in America would take these, and I'm sure the ones here do, but let's say the ones in America, if they only would take these to heart. The Ahlul Bayt teach us that when it comes to our profession, we should avoid being lazy. Again, from Imam Ali al-Islam, he says that that if a doctor is lazy, it's worse and uglier than laziness in anybody else. Because in that profession, you have to be very, very adept, you have to be quick, you have to be on the job and very attentive. Otherwise, things can slip. The Ahlul Bayt teach us, the Quran teaches as well too, that somebody who takes on this profession, they have to see them not. They have to see it as being part of an act of God. Look at the story of Nabi Ibrahim alayhi salam. Nabi Ibrahim, as part of the declaration of Tawheed he makes in the Quran, he says the following: وَإِذَا مَرِضْتُ فَهُوَ يَشْفِينِ. This is a very beautiful and deep statement that he makes. He says that when I fall sick, it is He who heals me. It's Allah who heals me. Nabi Ibrahim might have gone to doctors if he got sick. But he understands that at the end of the day, the one who is the cause of all causes is no other than the Rabb, no other than Allah. He is the one who heals. A doctor should see themselves not as being the one who solved that person's problems and therefore become arrogant. No. They should see themselves as being a channel by which Allah is manifesting His grace towards humankind. Now, these are just a few principles. There's so many more. But imagine somebody who takes these and then goes into the world and applies them. That person will be operating in the dunya, but they'll do so in a way that they're working for the hereafter. And as they see their patients, it's not about the dollars that they're racking up, but rather, it's about how much they are becoming closer and closer to Allah. How distinguished they're becoming in the eyes of God and raising and their standing with Him. We pray to Allah to give us that knowledge of how we can properly operate in the dunya in order to gain standing with Allah. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Tonight I would like to mention the story of a couple of the very special companions of Abu Abdullah Hussein alayhi salam. There were two individuals who were very special, and they played a very special role in Karbala due to their age and due to their esteem, due to their taqwa and their knowledge. These were Muslim ibn Awsaja and Habib ibn Mudahir. Muslim ibn Awsaja was somebody who was actually a companion of our Prophet. That's how old he was. That's how much he went back. He was somebody who was renowned for so many things. He was a reciter of the Qur'an. He was renowned for his zuhd, for his disattachment from the dunya. He was renowned for his battle valor. They would tell stories about Muslim ibn Awsaja. They would say that there was a battle that he participated in, where the Muslims were attacked, and before they could even get their ranks ready, Muslims stood alone, and he was able to defend against the Muslims against the entire army and take down six of the opposing men of the opposite army. That's on one hand. He had a very dear friend though by the name of Habib ibn al-Zahir. Habib, again, was somebody who was very renowned. He was a companion of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, but not just an ordinary companion. He was among the Ashab al-Sir, those who were privy to the special teachings of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, that others did not have that capacity to bear. He was somebody who had a deep love and connection with Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He was one who was, he signed the very first letter from the Kufans to invite Imam Hussein to Kufa. If no one else is going to support you, we are there for you. But when he realized the treacheries of his people, he and Muslim ibn Awsajah decide that they're going to make their way to Karbala no matter what. There were others who looked at the situation, they saw that Kufa was surrounded, that if they were to even escape, they would definitely be caught and be thrown into prison or even be killed. But they said that no, this is something we must do. We must join with our master Abu Abdullah and Hussein alayhi salam. Perhaps it was the case that Imam Hussein alayhi salam was longing for their company. Some stories, I don't know how accurate they are, but they do say that it's as if Imam Hussein alayhi salam had left a standard that was waiting for Habib to bear. And we can only imagine that when these two elderly companions joined the ranks of the companions of Imam Hussein, that the ladies of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam must have been very happy that finally Habib is with us, Muslim is with us. Habib ibn al-Mawahir, Ridwanullahi ta'ala alayh, on the 9th of Muharram, tells Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he says that, oh my master, will you give me permission to go to a nearby tribe by the name of Bani Asad? There are some young people there. If I get a chance to talk to them, I'm sure I can convince them to join us. Imam Hussein alayhi salam gives him that permission to go ahead. He goes forth, he talks to them, he actually is able to convince them. There are many of them, 90 of these young people who say that yes, we will join you, and they make their way towards Imam Hussein alayhi salam. But when Umar ibn Sa'd finds out what Habib has done, he sends 400 men to block their passage, to not allow them to join Imam Hussein. And so they end up dispersing, and Habib has to come back alone. Now imagine, Habib is going to back to his master. Maybe he's thinking that, is he going to be disappointed with me? I went off promising that I'll bring people to him, but I haven't been successful in doing so. But when Imam Hussein alayhi salam meets him, he tells him what's happened. Imam Hussein just tells him one thing. He says, لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. There is no might or power except for with Allah, the Most High, the Most Great. Look at the status of Habib. When he's reminded about the position of Allah in this universe, that's enough to calm him. Any sort of fear, any sort of embarrassment goes away and he remains firm in his commitment. Let's now look at the martyrdom of these two individuals. Sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. صلى الله عليك يا ابن رسول الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك عبد يبعى شراء Muslim ibn Awsajah seeks permission from his master Imam Hussein alayhi salam to defend him. He fights valiantly despite his old age. But after all, they were fighting an army that has so many people. After some time, the weakness and the wounds overcome him. He falls to the ground. He is not alone. Imam Hussein alayhi salam honors him. He goes to his old friend Muslim ibn Awsajah. He cries out, Rahimakallah, ya Muslim. May Allah have mercy on you, O Muslim. Imam Hussein alayhi salam recites the verse from the Quran. فَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ مَضَى مَنْ قَضَى نَحْبَهُ وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ يَنْتَظِرْ وَمَا بَدَّلُوا تَبْدِيلًا. Muslim is not alone. His dear friend from the past rushes to his side. He bends down near him. Muslim is breathing his last. Oh Muslim, it is very difficult for me to bear your loss. But be happy because you will be entering paradise. Just tell me one thing, is there anything I can do for you, my dear friend? Muslim is breathing his last. He points to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He tells Habib, فَقَاتِلْ دُونَهُ حَتَّى تَمُوتْ. Oh Habib, my only wish is concerning him. Fight is in his way, fight in his way until you too are killed. Habib takes the advice of Muslim. He also defends Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He cries out so bravely, أَنَا حَبِيبٌ وَحَبِيبُ بَعْدِرُ لَنَحْنُ أَزْكَى مِنْكُمْ وَأَطْهَرُ نَنْصُرُ خَيْرَ النَّاسِ حِينَ يُذْكَرُ. If you don't know me, I am Habib, the son of Mubahir. We are more pure than you and purified. We will come to the aid of the best of people when he is mentioned. He fights so bravely, but Habib is an old man as well. Eventually they surround him. One hits him from the front, one from the back. Habib falls to the ground, but as he stands up, one of the soldiers raises his sword. What sort of deed is he going to commit right now? He knows that the war booty is based on the number of heads that they can collect. This man rushes back to Kufa with his war booty on his saddle. It is dangling from the side when he enters Kufa. When he enters Kufa, according to some narrations, as he enters into the palace and comes out again, he notices that he is not alone. There is a young boy who is trailing him. There's a young boy who is with him wherever he goes. He confronts that young boy and he asks him, why is it that you are following me? He says that no, it is nothing. He says that no, you must tell me, why are you following me? He says that you see that head that you have dangling from your saddle. That is the head of my father, Habib, the son of Mubahir. I am the son of Habib, the son of Mubahir. Can you please give me the head of my father? The soldier says that if I give you this head, then I will not have anything to give to obey the law of Niziyad and earn my war bounty. He says that no, you must give me my head. But he says that I cannot ever do so. Look at the attachment of this young boy to his father. Imagine the women folk of the Ahlul Bayt and the court of Yazid when they see what has happened to the head of the beloved Hussein alayhi salam. Allah la'anat Allahi ala al-qawm al-zalimeen wa say'alama al-lazina zalamu wa ayyaman qalibin yanqalibun. Ma'atame Hussein.